Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we're living in extraordinary times. A diary could help you remember what life was like, or maybe even bring you some clarity right now. We will talk about the power of the pandemic journal later this hour. But first, for Nick Nurse, the road from small-town Iowa high school basketball star to championship NBA coach was long and winding, but he made the most of each step along the way. From Carroll, Iowa, he had a strong career at the University of Northern Iowa, but by the time he graduated, he knew he wanted to coach, a goal he pursued around the world with dogged determination. Now, a year after leading the Toronto Raptors to the NBA championship title in his first year as head coach, he's leading a team that can't play or even practice together because of COVID-19. I spoke with him late last week. Coach Nurse, thanks so much for talking with us.
Well, it's a pleasure, always, always to reconnect back in Iowa, so I'm happy to be here.
What's life for you like right now because of COVID-19?
Well, a lot like it is for a lot of people, but a little stricter maybe up here in Canada and Toronto. We've been pretty much home since March 11th, and obviously don't go to the office, no contact with really anybody, just to go out and get groceries and any other essential things, but pretty much essential travel only, and still pretty locked down up here in Canada.
What kind of contact do you have with your athletes right now?
Yeah, we got everybody's doing the Zoom calls and the WebEx calls and all the stuff. My technology use and base and knowledge has expanded a little bit during this pandemic. But yeah, we just get the guys together, all of them on a Zoom call normally, and talk to them just with any updates. We certainly have a member of our medical team is in frequent contact with them. It was daily for the first couple months, and now it's every other day, just checking to make sure they're okay, making sure that there's any signs or symptoms of anything. That we've been able to reopen the gym for about 2 weeks now, where only one player at a time can come in and one coach. So they go in and just get some shots up and things like that. But pretty busy other than that, right? Talking on, a bunch of committees and things like that about, what a restart of play might look like and where and the format and all those things. And, trying to be a helpful member of the community as well, doing, public service announcements for whoever needs them or whatever, just reminding people of social distancing, washing hands, staying home, those kind of things. But been pretty busy, really, for not having to coach any games, been pretty busy.
Well, I know that I guess everybody's being asked to be clairvoyant right now because none of us really know what the future holds. But what do you think the future of basketball looks like, at least in the next year or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the short term, I think the league's pretty determined on trying to get the season in. We're about 65 to 70 games in, so we almost got to the end. It sounds to me, pretty public knowledge that they're shooting for, like a campus community down in Orlando. Virtually everybody stays on site and games are played in front of no fans, but certainly televised. And they'll try to figure out a format that they think will work. Not sure what that's going to look like yet. There's a lot of options on the table, but I think we'll at some point get an announcement here about continuing the season, probably mid to late July, and then trying to crown a champion. I think 73 years in a row they've crowned a champion, and they're going to try to do it again.
I remember when this first started, there were questions, asked of NBA athletes about whether they could play in arenas without fans. And a lot of the athletes said, no, we're not going to play if we don't have the fans to play for. Are attitudes shifting?
Well, I think that, you know, initially that didn't sound too appealing, but I'm not sure anybody knew. And like you said, nobody could really predict what was going to happen. I don't think anybody knew there'd be no basketball for this long or no sports anywhere for this long. So I think that the main thing is we can get back out there and play, and hopefully in a real safe environment. And that's also a critical point, that we can do this safely and have testing that's sound and fits in with the guidelines of the community. You know, obviously, the community that we play in is going to have a lot of testing available, because we certainly don't want to take away from any needs of the you know, general citizens there that may need it. So, you know, a lot of things are going to have to go to it. I think weeks and months have passed. A lot of those things are getting ironed out, and I don't think they'll make any moves until they'll get it to a reasonably safe scenario.
Well, instead of trying to peer into the murky future, let's talk about the past. Let's go back into the past.
Okay.
As I mentioned, you grew up in Carroll, Iowa. You were an outstanding high school athlete. You went to the University of Northern Iowa and really had a great career there. What made you decide that you wanted to be a coach?
Well, it was pretty simple, really. I was playing basketball, and I actually jumped into the accounting program at Northern Iowa and thought I was going to be an accountant when I finished playing. And going into my senior year, I was kind of looking at the short term, saying, man, my basketball career is going to be over here pretty soon. And I kind of like basketball. and I thought, man, I got to stay around this game a little bit longer. So I went and talked to Eldon Miller, my coach at the time, and Bob Bowlesby, who was the athletic director at the time. Now he's the commissioner of the Big 12 Conference. But just told him, I think I want to coach instead of being an accountant. And Eldon said, why don't you come in and, you know, be an assistant for me next year? And that was about, I don't know, 30 years ago now. So I tell people I haven't accounted for anything since I left, but I've been able to stay employed as a basketball coach. And obviously it was pretty good decision, pretty fun decision, pretty interesting path that we chose.
You are known for doing your homework and really taking every opportunity to work on developing your skills. Do you think you were a careful observer of your coaches even before you thought you wanted to be one?
Yeah. I mean, I think certainly had a great high school coach, Wayne Chanley. Really was awesome as a teacher of the game, fundamentals, drills, team play, defense. I learned a lot from him. Obviously, Eldon Miller was similar, you know, a great teacher of the game. So I think those guys certainly taught me a lot. And I don't know if I was as honed in. You know, once I decided I was going to coach, I had a lot of discussions with both of them. In fact, when I took my first head coaching job, which was to be a player coach in Derby, England, I kind of remember putting down the phone after accepting that job, and the next call I made was to my high school coach, Wayne Chanley, and I was like going over all the drills with him and all the stuff. I was kind of like, geez, I got to do this job now. I just took it. I don't know if I'm ready for it, so I better get ready quick. So I started watching film and restudying, and he sent me a bunch of stuff and always kind of use that as a guideline. You know, still today, study a lot of coaches, even in other sports, just to see if I can pick up something, you know.
Well, jumping into that coaching job with the British Basketball League, you were a player coach, so you were playing mm-hmm. with the guys that you were mm-hmm. coaching, and you were younger than a lot of the guys that you were coaching.
Yeah.
I can't think of really a more challenging position to be in. What was that like?
Well, I'm not quite so sure I knew what I was doing when I took that job. I knew I wanted to play again, right? I'd had some people contact me about playing, so I knew I wanted to play. And this guy, this owner of this team, called me up and says I sent like a cover letter and a package of, you know, resume and newspaper clippings or whatever over to this guy, and he called me and said, says here that you want to play and or coach. And he said, how about both? And I said, you know, that isn't a bad idea. I get to play, and I know I want to coach. That's a good idea. So Yeah, and then when I got there, I guess I didn't really think about it. I had my starting center on my team was 35 years old, which certainly doesn't seem very old to me now. But as a 22-year-old, to go in there and kind of run the show with a bunch of guys in their 30s and all that stuff was interesting at first. But, luckily I was kind of like a point guard and in college. I just kind of called the plays like I normally would as a point guard. But, tried to play really hard and lead by example. And, if we had drills in practice, I'd try to win sprints or whatever to try to, at least again show them that hard work was important to me and try to get them to follow along a little bit.
If I remember correctly, you were in the BBL for 11 years and you won 9 mm-hmm. championships during that time?
Yeah, something like that. I think it was 11 years, and there's a few wins in there as well. It's not the place everybody goes to learn their coaching trade. Basketball in Britain is it's down there.
Right, it's an afterthought.
Sporting world. Yeah, for sure. But, it ended up being the league kind of took a bunch of different transformations. It ended up in the mid-90s, especially mid-90s to 2000. It got very competitive. They put up a bunch of new arenas. They got a television deal on Sky. So it did pick up quite a bit. But that doesn't matter. What mattered was there was a bunch of really good coaches and a bunch of really good players. And, it was 60, 70 games a year. And I thought that the reason I really went over there was to get some head coaching experience. And I really didn't plan on staying that long, but it ended up enjoying it.
I'm talking with Nick Nurse. He is the head coach for the Toronto Raptors. The Toronto Raptors won the NBA championship title last year, his first year as head coach. And Nick Nurse hails from Carroll, Iowa. We are talking about his career, the experiences he had along the road to the NBA. And we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me is Nick Nurse. He is the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. They won the NBA championship title last year, his first year as head coach. He grew up in Carroll, Iowa, and was a high school standout, also went to the University of Northern Iowa, and had a long and winding road on his way to coaching in the NBA. And Nick, just before the break, we were talking about your time in the British Basketball League, where you spent just over a decade as a coach and player and met with a lot of success there. When you were there, can you tell me, you seem to be an incredibly goal-directed man. Did you always have your sights set on the NBA?
Not really. I think that my short-term goal was to find out if I was any good as a coach. And I think to grab a head coaching job was the way I was going to get to that answer. Then I started just trying to take each season as they came and put myself in a scenario where, is this season going to make me better? What am I going to learn? How am I going to get to be a better coach? What experiments can I do of things that interest me and just keep making me better? I enjoyed the lifestyle over there. I was traveling around to a lot of countries, et cetera, that ended up being pretty fun. I think I really started thinking about being an NBA coach when I came back to Iowa to coach the Iowa Energy and the NBA, what was called the NBA Development League, now called the NBA G League, because you kind of get close. You're like one step, you're in the minor leagues of the NBA, and you're you feel like you're a lot closer. And then that's when I kind of said, you know, if I can get something done at this job, maybe I'll get a chance to move up to the NBA.
You worked really hard to get that job with the Iowa Energy and to bring the Iowa Energy to Iowa. Can you tell me a little bit about what your vision was for that?
Well, it's a good story because I was still coaching in England, and I literally was driving down 235 in Des Moines, and I hadn't even realized that the new arena was there. I was back on a trip from England, and I saw that arena, and I literally went down to the next exit and pulled over and drove back and parked outside. I didn't go in, but I called the general manager on the phone, you know, told him that I was Nick Nurse, and I played at Northern Iowa, coaching overseas, and I was just curious as to what they were, you know, doing in the arena. And he said, well, we had a minor league hockey team. And I said, you know, I've been hanging around the summer leagues of the NBA, and I think the NBA Development League is really going to expand and take off. Would you be interested in putting a team in there? And he said, yeah, boy, we'd love to. And then I called up the NBA, and they put me through down to the D-League office there in South Carolina. And I talked to them and said, hey, would you guys be interested in having a franchise in Des Moines? They said, we'd love to. And then I was like, now what?
Right.
Now what? I got two interested parties. Now what do I do? But I didn't do anything other than a bunch of research on minor league basketball and talk to some other D-League people. And I didn't really say anything other than I was just researching it. But anyways, a friend of mine named Orv Salmon, who was one of my assistants, I was coach up at Boone, the junior college. You know, said you ought to talk to Jerry Crawford, who's a prominent attorney in town, and he said he's just a guy that knows kind of how to put deals together. So I called Jerry, and he wasn't very enthusiastic at my initial phone call, but he said, "Come on down, let's talk about it." And kind of one thing led to another, and you know, we got Gary Kirk involved, and Paul Dre, and Sheldon Oringer, and a bunch of local people. Just kind of the momentum build. And next thing you know, we had a D-League team in Des Moines.
You have said that coaching in the Development League was an incredible challenge because of the turnover in the league. Tell me more about what that was like as a coach.
Yeah, it was a great challenge. It was a great challenge to embrace and understand the benefits of it rather than think it's impossible to do. The benefits were that it was unlike any other situation where you kind of get a team and you figure out roles and you try to develop some chemistry, and that's kind of your team for the year. Well, you would do all that stuff in the D League, and then, you know, 10 or 15 games in, four guys maybe would leave and four new guys would come in. You'd have to start over and do it all again. And it was great, you know, and that would go on maybe five or six times, but it was great experience from just a managerial and leadership side of coaching, you know, to get that experience, to get to do that over and over again and learn from the good things and throw out the things you did wrong on the last time around or whatever. And it kind of lets you polish what I would consider really, really valuable skills in basketball, you know, chemistry, roles that guys are going to play, substitutions, changes, handling adversity, and just going on with, you know, whether you had a lot of practice or one practice or no practice for some guys. You just had to go out there and try to start figuring it out when the ball went up, and it really gives you some valuable experience.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, you're known for really doing your homework and trying to prepare yourself. I know that you've studied management techniques and tried to apply those to coaching. You've got your accountant degree, you've got your experience as a player and a coach, but put all the pieces together. If you had to compare coaching to other jobs, other careers, other skills that you need to bring to it, what's important?
Well, I think that one of the things too, and I'll go back to my UNI days, I give a lot of credit to, there was a football coach at UNI named Daryl Mudra, nicknamed Dr. Victory. What a great nickname, right? But he was kind of way ahead of his time. You know, he wrote a book called Freedom in the Huddle. He taught a class in sports psychology there. He coached from the press box, and really one of his underlying theories was coaching democratically, like letting your assistant coaches coach and do their job and letting the players play and letting the players have input and all those kind of things. So he was way ahead of his time, and I really kind of devoured a lot of his teachings and thoughts. But what more importantly, what that did was set me on a path maybe more away from studying X's and O's. Like, the X's and O's are really important, right? The tactics of the game and the drills you're going to use and all that kind of stuff. But it sent me into a whole nother studying leadership, studying sports psychology, studying even human performance. How can you get them to have the most energy come game time? Just looking at the mental aspects of the game. So I think that all those things go into the job I have. I always say that the X's and O's is about 15% of what I do. It's all those other areas that are critical when you're trying to get teams to play at a championship level.
I'm talking with Nick Nurse. He is the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, originally from Carroll, Iowa. And how would you describe your approach to coaching now?
Very similar. I think that, when I approach a season, I try to get a vision for that season and that team. And that's all well and good, right? But that vision's got to be closely followed up with a plan. And usually the vision and the plan is that we're going to try to get out of bed most days figuring out how we're going to take a step closer to winning the championship. How can you get the players to see and become even more than they think they can become, right? The one-on-one connections that you can have with them, sharing some of the visions about where you see them being successful, putting them in situations to succeed, holding them accountable, being very businesslike, being very thorough in your planning, whether it's just their individual planning or game planning for the next game. But I love to get the players involved. I love to hear their feedback. I love to, if they see a different way to cover a certain defensive thing or something, we'll try it, but we'll have a plan A and maybe a plan B, and we'll go with their way and say, if it, doesn't work, maybe we're going to come back to our plan B. But it seems to open up some lines of communication, builds a trust factor, builds a relationship factor. I don't know. I guess that's all I can say for that answer.
You worked your way up the ladder at the Raptors. And yeah. Again, that's the story of your life. You've been working your way up the ladder for so many years. But then in your first season as head coach, you lead the team to the championship, the Raptors' very first championship. What did that feel like to do that in your first year?
Well, obviously it was amazing, right? It really was. And the specialness of being the first one for Toronto and the country of Canada, if you watched any of it, you saw the huge crowds outside, you saw the huge crowds at the parade. It really was a magical moment for this city and this country. But while I was going through it, and I got asked this a lot, before game 7 against Philadelphia, I kept getting out, what do you feel like? How does it feel to be going into your first NBA game 7? And my answer was, honestly, it feels like 1996 when I was getting ready to play for the championship with the Birmingham Bullets in England versus the London Towers, because at that time that meant the world to me, as this does now. And it didn't feel much different to me. And people say, oh, how can that be, 20,000 fans versus 8,000 or whatever and all this stuff. But once the ball goes up, you really only get focused in on what's happening out on the court. And I really thought we were the team of destiny last year. I think that made me confident we could do well. Our team had an incredible knack for bouncing back all season long. When something really bad would happen, it'd be about 24 hours before we'd fix it in the next game and play really well. And, those things were happening throughout the playoffs. And like I said, I thought we were kind of a team of destiny and we were going to do it, and kind of believed we were going to do it, from the start.
Now, of course, this is the world's weirdest season that you're experiencing right now. But heading into your second season after that incredible first season, is that a difficult thing to take on mentally?
You know what? I thought it was going to be. I really thought that being the champs and defending champs and how we, you know, I thought that was going to be kind of a burden to have to carry around, but it hasn't been an issue at all, which has been A, surprising to me, and B, really, really good. I just think we don't really talk about it. I think our team came back this year ready to kind of go to work and see what we could do. Obviously, we lost a couple really key players, but we've got a lot of young emerging talent, and those guys were ready for an opportunity, and the opportunity presented itself for some of them, and they've just taken it and done great.
You have invited a few other Iowans to be part of your coaching staff, the Toronto Raptors. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, first I got Nate Bjorkgren from Storm Lake. He was actually a walk-on player when I was an assistant at the University of South Dakota. But when the Iowa Energy formed, he was coaching high school basketball in Phoenix, said he wanted to come back to Iowa, and he actually volunteered for, I think, 2 years before we actually could get him on the payroll. But he ended up becoming a great D-League head coach, and we actually met in the finals 1 year. He was coaching Santa Cruz. I was coaching Rio Grande Valley. He went to Phoenix Suns as an assistant when I got this job, brought him in with me. And the other member is Brittany Donaldson. She went to Sioux City North High School. I also went to Northern Iowa, was a standout player for the Panthers. She was in our analytics department in our front office, and had an assistant job open up this past summer and hired her. I think made her the 10th female assistant in the NBA.
Yeah,
she's awesome, too. She was a great shooter and is a really knowledgeable coach. She had a bright future.
You think it's coincidental that they're Iowans, or is there something about being Iowan that maybe...
It doesn't hurt anything. I tell you what, Nate and I's thing was kind of like, you know, he wanted to do it, and I didn't really know him all that well, and the price was right back then in the D-League. You know, he was volunteering. I mean, it was like, sure, we'll take your help. We just ended up clicking, and we literally spent, 10, 12 plus hours a day together for 4 years trying to put that Iowa Energy Championship team together, and we were connected from then on, and they're very connected now, and it's very cool, because when the clock was ticking down, when we were getting ready to win that championship with the Iowa Energy, I kind of, everybody was jumping around, and there was still, you know, 15 seconds. I said, come on, man, let's just sit down here, me and you, and let's enjoy this here for a minute. And we gotta do it again. Last year out in Golden State, we kind of replayed the same scenario. So really neat to go through that with him and Brittany. Obviously, you know, the Northern Iowa connection didn't hurt anything, that's for sure.
Thinking back to Nick Nurse back in 1985, playing for Kemper High School in Carroll, what do you wish that you could tell him right now?
Shoot more. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Nothing really. I mean, I think that, you know, what I would probably always say, like again, in 85, when I was playing for Kemper, I was really giving it everything I had. You know, it was super focused. It was shooting shots in the summer. It was weights. It was running to be a great high school player. And then, you know, you go to Northern Iowa and it becomes the same thing. And then all those little funny jobs I had from McAllen, Texas, to Enid, Oklahoma, to Ostend, Belgium, to Derby, England, to, gosh, you can name 10 other ones probably, but I love those jobs, you know, each and every one of them. I love them, put my heart and soul into them. I think it was a long shot that I got to come all the way to the NBA, but if I ever got the shot, I wanted to be ready, and I was able to prepare myself at all those little stops along the way.
You've always been so goal-directed, and you've reached the pinnacle in basketball. What prize do you have your eyes on now?
Well, this is a tough business. You got to do it again, right?
and again, right?
You got to do it again. I mean, I think that again, it hasn't real. Maybe it just hasn't hit me, you know, that we won an NBA title. But I think the seasons move pretty quick. You get ready for another one, and I always like to say, you know, we start out with trying to formulate a plan of how can we win it. You know, how can we get ourselves in position to win it? And you just kind of take those year by year. You know, you just the next season comes and you get ready, and if it works out, great. You celebrate a little bit more in the summer is the only difference. And when you don't, you work a little harder trying to figure out what you didn't go right, what you can make go a little better, and you just take them. Incredibly blessed, you know, to have the opportunity to do something I love so much, and like I said, be able to stay employed at it for 30 years now.
Nick Nurse, thank you so much.
No problem. That was great. I love it. You know, I love Iowa, and being from there, I couldn't be more proud.
Nick Nurse, head coach of the Toronto Raptors. He led the team to the NBA championship title last year in his first year as head coach. And of course, he hails from Carroll, Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.